Hey, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I really got out a lot out of today, and I think of this as marketing and promotion. I'm actually walking away with development and growth.
Yeah, I thought this whole experience, the mentoring conversation before we started recording and this conversation after, was extremely helpful.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you're in transition with your business and how you are leading, they go together, please call me right away at 1-612-804-8920. What I know for sure is when you're in a pivotal situation in the middle of overcoming a whole host of challenges, you need clarity. The way business owners get clarity is by gathering information and resources while continuing to keep their business cash flowing. So use We Mentor Inc. to reinvent or evolve yourself while you redesign your business. We help you take charge of your self-leadership process so you can overcome internal challenges assertively. Self-leadership is about taking charge of the transition you and your business are in. Please do not allow yourself to be the obstacle in becoming your next best self-leader. You can also reach me by emailing nancy@wementor.com. I'm ready for a co-mentoring adventure with you. And by the way, so is today's sponsor, Sally Doyle. You can schedule a profit analysis with her for only $99. Take charge of your money life while you're becoming the greatest self-leader you can possibly be. Sally Doyle is the founder of Absolute Business Solutions. She's known as a trustworthy bookkeeper who loves crunching the numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs. You can sleep soundly knowing every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You're freed up to do the work you're good at and keep leading. Sally Doyle, your profit strategist, bookkeeper, and innovative thinker. You can reach her at 1-651-208-8151 or click on the link below under the heading sponsor. I'm so excited for today's guest, who is Tom Hubler of Hubler Family Business. We're focusing in on family business, and why not have the most thought-provoking thought leader of our time? Do you like that, Tom?
That's very good. Very good. Okay. Would you please call my wife?
So in 1980, when Tom began his career as a family business consultant, he was one of the few professionals addressing family-owned business needs in the United States. Since then, he's played a major role in shaping the family business consultant field, from helping business colleges establish family business institutes to working directly as family business consultants for hundreds of clients. Today, Tom continues his longstanding dedication to helping families of wealth and family-owned businesses succeed. He helps families develop a shared vision for the family and for the business, as you heard in our first conversation. He also is able to help identify individual talents, tackle any unspoken issues, and create individual and organizational strategies to ensure a personally and financially rewarding business. In addition, Tom assists families of wealth with the creation of a wealth preparation plan, which is what we're focusing on today, on succession planning, that ensures family values continue to emphasize a family culture of gratitude, philanthropy, and purposeful living. Some of his achievements, there are many. He's a founding member and fellow of the Family Firm Institute in Boston, a professional organization serving the needs of family-owned businesses. He's a professional in residence at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota for 10 years. Tom is a former adjunct instructor there. He co-taught a class in family business management. He's also the founder of the Minnesota Family Business Awards, which began in 2007. He's a monthly contributor in the Twin Cities Business Magazine. He's published over 50 articles and scholarly papers, including a monthly column in Twin Cities Business Monthly Magazine. He's the recipient of the University of St. Thomas Family Business Leadership Award, twice guest on NBC's Today Show. He's been quoted frequently in the New York Times Magazine, Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and he speaks on cutting-edge family business issues around the world. Tom lives in St. Paul, Minnesota with his wife, Joy. Together, they enjoy life with two adult children and their spouses and seven grandchildren. Tom also published The Soul of Family Business, a practical guide to family business success and a loving family in 2018. So welcome to our second conversation, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. How are you feeling now?
I'm excited.
Yes. You're maintaining that throughout.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, we might as well, you know, hit it hard here.
Okay.
He's sitting up straight, big smile on his face. So we're going to go through the top 10 obstacles of family business succession planning. It seems to be a great theme because when I interviewed with Ted Risdahl, he also had his top 10 list. We start with number 10. Number 10 is poor expression of feelings and wants.
Right. So like, first of all, this was my David Letterman list. This is how I got started on this. And I used to give it as a presentation and people really liked it. So then I ended up writing it up. So the first one is...
That's how Ted and John Risdahl, they put together their top 10 list.
Yeah.
And Ted had a funny story because, so they were going to speak at the St. Thomas, their business center meeting.
Yeah.
He went and said to his dad, you know, should we plan for this? He goes, oh no, we're fine. He goes, do you want to look it over? No, let's just wing it. So it was just funny how Todd and him, you know, they have such a unique relationship with each other and a sense of humor about and a deep understanding of each other. It's really a beautiful thing.
Right. No, I think you're right about that.
Yeah. Because you know them too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like feelings and wants are one of the big obstacles. And the reason is that feelings and wants are the integral part of good communication. And when communication breaks down in a family or in a family business, it's because feelings and wants are not being discussed. So, and it's very difficult for most people to talk about their feelings, even with people they love. So it's important to learn how to do that. And one of the things I recommend to clients and help them with is what's called the Collaborative Team Skills, which is a program to teach people about how to communicate in a positive way and using their feelings and wants.
I love the way that you frame it in your book and building emotional connections along with that. Did you want to say anything more about the collaborative process?
Well, the Collaborative Team Skills basically is the best program of its type in the country about communication and management of differences. And it's the basis for it or the foundation for it is what, at least I think, is what's called the information wheel. And the information wheel basically breaks down communication issues into five parts. And it never dawned on me that there would be five parts to an issue. And it's the sensory data, which is the information you get through your senses.
Yeah.
What you think is the meaning you make out of what you're experiencing. How you're feeling, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a spontaneous thing that goes on immediately. But the idea is learning how to recognize your feelings. And then what you want is the next one. And the reason it's so difficult for people to talk about their feelings and wants is because they have to be vulnerable. And I said earlier, even with the people you love, it's hard to do. So like, for instance, when I was a kid, we would go visit relatives and we'd go visit and sit down in the living room and there would be a sofa and some chairs and a coffee table. And on the coffee table was a candy dish. And I'd say, I want a piece of candy. And then what do you think they told me?
No.
No. And they said, it's more polite to wait till it's offered, right?
Yeah, right.
So I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I got married, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. I thought, well, she'd love me. She'd know what I want, right? Well, no. And so learning to tell people what you want is something that's a very important thing to do.
Yeah.
And you have to learn how to do that, particularly around difficult things or emotional things. And so that's why that's so important.
Yeah. I grew up in a family business. My parents were dairy farmers.
Okay.
And this was actually my dad's third venture when we moved to the farm and six kids. And we moved there when I was starting in seventh grade. it was feelings were expressed through physical labor.
Right.
And it was just interesting, the things that you, you know, remember and stay with. But right. You're right about vulnerability, that it takes a pause.
Yep.
And there has to be like no negative consequences.
Right. They have to have a safe environment.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people are not going to.
Right. Because it's hard. And if there's no listening, no empathy, you know, all those pieces are so critical in setting up the environment so people can share their feelings.
Right.
My cousin is one of the doctors for the Packers.
Oh, really?
And recently I was at one of my uncle's funerals and he was there. I think he's okay, would be okay with me sharing this. But there's a new coach who's a millennial,
right,
and they're more in touch with their feelings.
Right.
And he said it just has a different way in which it affects the team.
Right.
And so the concern is, are they going to be gentler football players when they really need to be aggressive?
Right, right, right.
But that's kind of how business owners view their business entities.
Right.
Where if you're talking about feelings, it somehow means that you're not going to work as hard or, you know, you're going to release some stamina or something.
Right, right. And it's an integral part of anything, any kind of communication, and they need to be communicated. And again, as I said earlier, when communication breaks down, it's because feelings and wants are not being expressed.
So when you're working with people, because I know that it takes a long while for people to get comfortable with sharing their feelings.
Right.
So how do you set that up? So
practicing.
It's a safe...
practicing.
Well, do you have people buy in to the ground rules? Or?
You know, basically, we start practicing. You know, we work with each person gets their own information wheel, and we'll practice with specific issues. And so, like, if we were together, like you and I working together, we would, we'd each get our own information wheel, and we'd pick a topic that wasn't too difficult to talk about, and we'd practice with something that was easy and learn about how to identify our feelings and so forth.
Yeah.
For the more advanced, one of the things I do is I send people out to the Strozzi Institute out in Petaluma, California, where they talk about the embodiment of leadership. And how, you know, if you want to be a successful person, you have to pay attention to what's going on in your body. And again, all feelings are in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching people about how to recognize where they feel happy, sad, mad, glad, angry, whatever the feeling happens to be, is something that they can practice and learn.
Yeah, excellent. And so number 9 is differences are seen as a liability rather than an asset.
That's right. And so then families that are flexible and successful, differences are an asset, and they basically can look at them and say, oh, you look at it differently. How can we take your idea of how to do things versus my idea about how to do things and come together with a third or a fourth way of doing something?
Now, go ahead.
But in families where that's a liability, they say, you know, the fact that you brought that up is a difference, and I don't want you to talk about that. That's something we're not going to talk about. We're going to pretend that it's not there. And that causes all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
So when differences are seen as a liability, you want them to be seen as an asset.
Right. Do you bring in some other tools? Like I know, like with the Myers-Briggs or, you know, when you're looking at that.
That's one of the things we do right off the bat in our first meeting, our first what's called a family business planning meeting, is using the Myers-Briggs as a resource to begin to talk about differences in a positive way and help them understand that their perspective is unique. And it's actually more of a relaxed, fun way to talk about differences. And they get all excited and talking about this and seeing what each other's perspectives are about things. Oh, isn't this interesting? Oh, that's
what's your combination?
That's why we were doing that. Or that's why we've been arguing about that or whatever it happens to be. And so it becomes a very fun thing to do.
Yeah. I was first introduced to the Myers-Briggs when I was teaching fourth grade, and a mother-daughter, they were very different and they weren't getting along at all. And so I thought, I've got to have a tool that I can use with them. And I pulled the Myers-Briggs, and it made a total difference in how they communicated.
Right.
It was just phenomenal.
So what it does is objectifies things rather than personalizing them. And so if you can objectify and say, gee, that's okay, rather than personalizing it, you and me, it becomes a positive thing.
Yeah. And then you start to notice differences.
Yes.
Instead of making them wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Indirect communication. Oh,
so,
that's huge.
So I have a problem with you, Nancy, but I'm not going to talk with you about it directly. I'm going to call Michael up and say, hey, listen, Michael, what's going on with Nancy? And Michael says, well, why haven't you talked with her? You can't talk with that bitch. You know what she's like. And so what I do is I poison the will, get a third party involved, and it creates all kinds of problems rather than having a direct conversation. So the next time I call my colleagues, I say, "Amy, listen, I just heard that the most important thing to do is to have a direct conversation." And I talk to Nancy all the time, and it works out pretty well. And as a matter of fact, I'll take you over to her office, and I'll have you I'll sit down with you guys while you work things out. And so he's going to take us back over there and get us involved in the conversation in a direct, positive way.
Yeah, because to get out of the indirect communicating, you need to muster up some courage.
Right.
To talk about what's in your heart and what's really going on, which is that connecting with the vulnerability. Yeah.
So there's a thing I pass out at the Family Business Planning Meeting. It's called Managing from the Heart. And the heart is an acronym. And the H is to hear and understand me. So understanding is very important. The E is, even if you disagree, please don't make me wrong. A is to acknowledge the greatness within me or within each other. R is to remember to look for my loving intentions.
Beautiful.
Right?
Yeah.
So nobody gets up in the morning and says, "How can I go down to the office and screw up my family or screw up my business?" They don't do that.
Right.
So you got to remember that. It's important to remember that.
Yeah.
And then T is to tell me the truth with compassion. So I say to people, I believe in honesty, openness, and candor about everything, but it needs to be done with kindness, care, and respect.
Yeah.
There's a woman whose name is Angeles Arian. I don't know if you know her. She's a cultural anthropologist who lived out in Sausalito, California, and she wrote a book called The Fourfold Way.
Oh, yes, I am familiar. Yes.
And the third rule is to be able to speak your truth without judgment, criticism, or blame. And so the idea is that whatever's on your chest, you need to get it off your chest, but to do it with kindness, care, and respect, that type of thing.
Beautiful. Good advice there. Number seven, also a big one, entitlement.
You know, when I first started doing this work 35 years ago, people say, "I'll bet you meet a lot of younger generation adult children who are born with a silver spoon in their mouths." I say, "Not really." You know, I've met, two or three over the course of my career, maybe four or five, but not that many. But who do you think I do meet in the context of family-owned businesses that is entitled? Who do you think they might be, Nancy?
The founder?
That's right. You got it. You moved to the top of the class.
Ding, 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 ding,
they
ding.
Say, "Listen, I own this thing. I founded this thing. I'll do whatever the heck I want to do." And they sometimes do it at the expense of their family and of the business.
Yeah.
And they're loath. I mean, they're loath. And they just don't want to, they don't want to leave the family business. They equate succession planning with death and or retirement. And my belief is that you really don't have to retire. And I refer to that as in the book as called The Last Challenge of Entrepreneurship. And what I believe is that entrepreneurs need to figure out what gives them heart and meaning, choose that, and then become the architect and the designer of the new ownership system, which gets into governance and so forth, the new management and leadership system, and collaborate with their family members and their advisors to create those things. And so that they don't have to be entitled. They can, and then in addition to that, get involved with their legacy in terms of how they want to be remembered and what are they going to do with their grandkids and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at entitlement.
Okay. Yeah. And developing hobbies too.
Yes.
That's really, Well, that's a good way to address it.
I call that life career planning for the senior generation.
Right.
No, seriously.
Exactly it.
Have a plan. Yeah. You got to have a plan. What are you going to do for the next 20 or 30 years?
Right, because the highest number of suicide is actually right out of high school and right at retirement.
Right. People don't live very long if they retire.
Without a plan.
Yeah. They got to have a plan.
Yeah. Scarcity, number six.
So
I was surprised with that one.
So one of the things that occurs in families in general, but certainly in family businesses, is sibling rivalry.
Oh.
Okay? So if
shock.
So if the siblings are rivaling, what are they rivaling about?
Yeah.
What are they rivaling about?
Who's doing what? Who's getting what?
It's the rivaling for the attention of the father generally.
Oh, is it?
And they believe that there isn't enough to go around. So that's what scarcity means. It's like there isn't enough love, there isn't enough attention, there isn't enough whatever from the dad to go around. And that's what they're rivaling about from my perspective.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what that's all about.
Okay. And number five, history.
History is a big issue in all of our families. And we tend to mythologize our history. And one of the books I used to make reference to when I was at St. Thomas teaching over there was the book is called The Way We Never Were. And it has to do with how families mythologize their history and pretend that everything is hunky-dory all the time. And the truth of the matter is that when families mythologize things, they not only mythologize the difficult things, but also the positive things. And the idea, the idea is you need to embrace your history. You do need to embrace whatever it is that's gone on in your family, good, bad, or indifferent. And the paradox is if you can do that, it allows you to go forward.
I think there's great resistance in going back.
Yes.
And coming to terms with your history.
Right, right. But if you don't, you're going to repeat it. So there's a book, there was a movie and a book called Zorba the Greek. Are you familiar with that film?
Yeah.
It's a 1964 film. It's a family business film because it's a story about an English literature professor who his name is his real name is Alan Bates. And he inherited a mine from his father, a bauxite mine in Crete. And he was sailing over to Crete to see the mine for the first time. And he stopped in Athens and he met a guy named Zorba. And Zorba was a roustabout who conned him into hiring to run the mine. And they're sailing over to Crete and they're getting to know each other. And Alan Bates says to Zorba, he said, Zorba, tell me, are you married? And Zorba said, am I not a man? I have the wife, the kids, the house, the full catastrophe. Now, there was a book called Full Catastrophe Living, and it's a book by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who founded the Pain and Stress Reduction Center at UMass Hospitals. And his philosophy is that if you want to get through the pain, you have to embrace it. And so on Bill Moyers' Healing in the Mind on public television in 1985, these older men couldn't pick up their grandkids because of their back pain. And after going through this 8-week program of learning how to embrace your history and your pain, they were bouncing these grandkids all around, right? Huh. So in the movie, Zorba, every time they did anything with this mind, it was a disaster. It was one disaster after another. And what Zorba would do is he would dance and he would celebrate and he would take unto himself all this negativity, right? Hmm. The last line of the film is, Alan Bates says to Zorba, he says, Zorba, will you teach me how to dance? Will you teach me how to embrace life?
Oh.
Will you, that type of thing. So,
just wonderful way to go through life is really understanding your history.
Yeah.
Number four, well, that's part of two why I'm doing this.
Right.
Is so that entrepreneurs, when they're reflecting on their own personal histories.
Right.
So that when they're out in the world, they can actually talk about it in a way and gather new insights.
But I want you to know, Nancy, if things are going to change around here in terms of our relationship, you're the one that's going to have to change. You're the one that's...
That must be the other-oriented regarding change.
Right.
Number four.
You're the one that's going to have to get things better around here. I mean, and if you'd listen to me, I've been telling you for years, all these problems you've got, and if you just get your act together and follow my suggestions and advice, you wouldn't have all these problems you've got.
Right, right. Should have been the same person. Oh.
So.
Yes. Anything else you'd like to say regarding that?
No, that's enough, I think.
Yeah, okay. I think everybody got that one. Number three, control.
So control, one of the things that's...
I'm surprised you did... Okay, it's control. I'm surprised the word power isn't connected to it.
Well, to me, it's not necessarily power. It has to do with, the reason entrepreneurs are so successful is because they're very, very controlling. Kirk Carlson, who was Minnesota's most famous entrepreneur, was very, very controlling. And that's why he was so successful. But his Achilles heel was the fact that he was controlling. And as a result of that, he had a very difficult time when it came to succession planning. And he went through two or three people, in terms of successors, who didn't make it in his company until he finally got a board of directors, and the board of directors mandated that he would check and consider his daughter,
Marilyn.
And Marilyn, as it turned out, was a terrific leader.
Yeah.
And so controlling is a kind of a negative thing for entrepreneurs on the one hand, because it's their Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And they need to, in order to do succession planning, you have to involve other people, you have to involve your professionals, and you can't just have it your way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can see that also can be paralyzing for growth.
Yes,
because you're trying to do everything and control everything.
What brings you, what entrepreneurs do to bring them to a point in history, in terms of the history of their company, is terrific, but it's not what's going to get them to the next level.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons, you know, that you need a succession plan is because you need to bring in a new system about how to grow the company. Otherwise, it'll continue to be what it, you know, it'll idle. It won't do much. It'll just...
Yeah. Well, and it's tricky too with who can take the vision
right.
and move it forward.
Right. Who can maintain the entrepreneurial spirit
yeah.
that was the, you know, that was the entrepreneur's vision and convert it into a more professionally managed company.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Yeah. And number two is a lack of forgiveness.
Yes.
And we were just talking about that off air because
yes.
I'm thinking
yes.
of doing one of our We Mentor mini labs with Mary Hayes Greco on forgiveness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just for business owners, because that's a common theme that I've seen in working with thousands
right.
of entrepreneurs
right,
is
right.
the not forgiving themselves. Or there's like one, they've forgiven themselves for all these certain things, but
right.
there's one big thing
right.
that they haven't.
Right. So it's impossible to live in a family with people you love and not inadvertently step on each other's toes. It happens all the time with people we love.
Yeah.
And so people need to take what they learn on Friday night, Saturday, or Sunday and bring it into the rest of their lives and forgive each other. And there are many families that don't do that. And they're the ones you read in the paper who are suing each other. Like the Lund family is a good example of that, where the sister wanted to cash out, wanted to liquefy and get out, and they didn't. There was no accommodation, and as a result of that, they haven't talked with each other. They're suing each other, and they haven't forgiven each other.
Yeah.
So, and in the book, we you know there's a thing called a family forgiveness ritual, and so what happened was I had a family. Where there was a father and two sons who worked in the business together.
Yes, I read that story. And
the older son and the father who worked side by side hadn't spoken to each other in 4 years. And so we were able to work all that out pretty well over the course of the summer in 1998. But what happened was the other five adult children would blame the older brother for, even though they weren't active in the company, they would blame him for what was going on in the company with the dad. And when they would get together for Thanksgiving and Christmas, they wouldn't talk with him. They'd ice him. And so I said to them, what you need is a family forgiveness ritual. And they said, well, what's that? And so I basically made it up.
So what on the spot.
They were a very traditional, conservative Catholic family. And I got their pastor, who was a Benedictine monk who'd been transferred up to St. Scholastica. And he came down and we created this ritual where people could talk about, well, I gave a little talk about forgiveness from a psychological perspective, and he gave a little talk about forgiveness from a religious perspective. And then we created some space for people to talk about what they wanted to be forgiven for. And so we were in this circle, and we got this all set up, and there was this long, long pause and silence. I thought, this is a mistake. I should have never done this. And pretty soon, the son who had flown in from Memphis piped up and said to his dad, I want to ask for your forgiveness for taking so long to tell you that I was gay. Now, he'd previously announced that, but now he's asking for forgiveness for not trusting his dad with the fact that he was gay. And so again, there was this another long, long pause. And finally, the dad said, I want to ask for your forgiveness for how I handled hearing that you were gay. And the mom started to cry, and everybody got involved. And so we did that, and then we had a ritual. They had a forgiveness ritual, and they had a home Eucharist, and then a potluck meal. And at the end of this event, they were in the kitchen just like any other family at any other holiday celebration, cleaning the dishes and talking and telling family stories and so forth and so on. So it changed the course, and I've done that with several families where you know we'll get together and do something like that.
So how long does it take for the family to come together and to plan this?
Basically, I'm the one that does all the planning, and I just ask them to show up.
Okay.
And the only thing is, like, if we're going to do a potluck meal, I'll say, hey, listen, you all got to sign up to bring something, and we'll do that.
Okay.
So.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a wonderful way to bring together people to heal wounds.
So let's, like, you know, one of the things I do when I do presentations, I say, now, what do you think number one is? Because I've got it, you know, you hadn't. And they say, well, it's taxes, and it's this, and it's that, and it's all this technical stuff. And so the number one issue in terms of what creates...
So surprising.
What creates obstacles into succession planning is the lack of expression of appreciation, recognition, and love. That's what drives the system. And that's what creates all the problems, because people don't do that. And what happens is the senior generation desperately wants to get that validation from their kids, but yeah. they will deny to their dying day that they need it or care about it or interested in it. But that's what they're looking for. And the adult children love their parents, but take them for granted and don't tell them, Mom and Dad, we love you and we care about what you've done. And in addition to that, the senior generation does the same thing. They take their kids for granted and they don't tell them, hey, we appreciate what you've done and da 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 da.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that drives the system. There was a movie, a 1957 film called The Bridge on the River Kwai. Are you familiar with that film? It's a story about these fellows who were prisoners of war, English prisoners of war, who were being forced to build a bridge for the Japanese. And Alec Guinness was the English commandant who was the head of the British prisoners. And at the very end of the film, he was reminiscing about his career. And he said to the Japanese colonel, he said, I've been in the service for 28 years, and I don't think I've been home more than 10 months that whole time. And I wouldn't have had it any other way, and I've loved India the best. But when you realize that you're closer to the back end than to the front, you begin to wonder about whether or not your life has meant something or not, particularly in comparison to other men's careers. I don't know if that thinking is very healthy, but I must admit I've been thinking like that from time to time. And I would suggest to you that everybody who gets into their 60s and 70s begins to wonder about whether or not their life has meant something or not. And you started out, I think when we first started in our first session about, we didn't quite finish it, but you asked me about, why did I write the book? Why did I, what got me going on this book? Well, it's got all these ideas. I was giving a talk one day. As a matter of fact, it was where you were there. It was the Lori talk, you were there.
Oh,
and I said, in response to that, I said, well, what really got me going was I'm just like my clients. I was looking, and I am looking for validation for all my ideas, these 10 obstacles and all the other things I've written about. I'm at a point in my career where I'm looking to see if people care about what I've written about or what I think about or what I care, in terms of MBA businesses.
Yeah.
So that's what drives the system.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you've experienced it firsthand.
Yes.
Which makes everything about what you're writing have a deeper impact in people's lives. Well, thank you for writing the book.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're
thanks
welcome.
Again for
you're
being
welcome.
Here.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I appreciate you so much. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Hi again, Sylvie. Thanks so much, Mike Abea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, brother from another mother. And we'll see everybody when you tune in next week. Bye. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. Totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to evolve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our We Mentor Self-Leadership community. You can subscribe for free through wementor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at wementor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.